The Ragged Trousered Philanthropists by Robert Tressel.
Never want this job to end, Mr. Owen.
Everything has to end, young Bert, but I share your sentiment. It's given me great satisfaction to do other than daubing and sloshing.
You know what I mean, don't you, Mr. Barrington? Us three have made a 13.
Well, we have. Good work, good fellowship.
It's going to be a special room for all to see you working many a year to come.
And your efforts as well, my boy. You've never showed any slackness or lack of enthusiasm.
I've never known time to pass so quickly. It's only registered when Crass has blowed his whistle.
So it should be, Bert. Enjoyment of work and satisfaction at the end of it.
Yeah, I'll soon be back in that freezing scullery washing brushes and cans, all wiping down walls with water running down my sleeves.
Anticipation will double the discomfort. Help me take off this paper and make sure the gold is rightly placed.
God, Owen, it's like a glimpse of heaven. It's so beautiful.
I knew you'd have done a fine job, Frank. Have you seen the light before?
Thanks, Joe.
Very nice.
Of course, it's only tracing over designs. And given the finest materials, it's hard not to make it look good.
Ah, you have to admit it's a credit to them, Bob. Right credit.
While the rest of us have been left short, getting on with the real work.
Aye.
You've shown what skills you have, and others amongst us might have, given a fair showing.
There's many a rose destined to bloom under the desert sun.
Ah, welcome back to the Ordinary Folk, Michael Angelo.
Hey, breaks have been a bit dull us of late, Frank. We ain't had no lectures at all. I think it's about time you explain what the real cause of poverty is, because I'm beginning to get anxious about it.
Come on, soapbox for Mr. Owen.
Where's the short steps? I shift up, Dawson, and snooze on the floor. Here you are, Frank, you are a puppet. Oi, 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 get a hold of now, lads. May I present Professor Frank Owen.
Mr. Chairman and gentlemen, unaccustomed as I am to public speaking, it is with some degree of hesitation that I venture to address myself to such a distinguished audience.
Quite right.
Give order, lads. Come on, Professor. In my previous lectures, I have endeavoured to convince you that money is in itself of no value and of no real use whatsoever. I don't think I've been very successful.
No, not a bit of it, mate. We all agrees with you.
Right. If a bloke was to come in here and offer to give me a quid, I'd refuse it. Come on, well, what do you reckon is the cause of poverty, then?
Well, in order to do away with poverty, we must destroy the causes. To do away with the causes, we must destroy the whole system.
Yes! Oh. Yes! Revolution! Where's Claire got me wages?
You won't need no money. What's holding us back then, Professor?
Yeah. Private ownership of land. Railways, tramways, gasworks, waterworks, competition in business, factories and other means of producing the necessaries and comforts in life.
How do you make all that out?
The greater number of the population work for their living. And in return for their labour, they receive money, some more, some less than others.
Hey, I suppose you think they ought to all get the same wages. Do you think it's right that a scavenger should get as much as a painter, then?
We'll come to that later. In order that these people may live, it is first necessary that they shall have a place to live in.
Well, I should never have thought it.
And that's the beginning of the trouble. The amount of rent demanded by those who own the country is so large that in order to pay it, the greater number of the majority have often to deprive themselves and their children not only of the comforts, but even the necessaries of life. Rent absorbs about one-third of working classes' total earnings. The majority work hard and live in poverty in order that the minority may live in luxury without working at all.
If you had an house, right, and let it to someone, you'd want your rent, wouldn't you?
And if a man's been careful, scraping and saving, and managed to buy a few houses to support him in his old age, they ought not to be taken away from him.
No. By far, the greatest part of the land is held by people who have absolutely no moral right to it. Possession of much of it was obtained by means of murder and theft perpetrated by the ancestors of the present holders. In other cases, when some king or prince wanted to get rid of a mistress, he presented a tract of our country to some nobleman on condition that he would marry the female. The present landholders are certainly not deserving people. Just think of the absurdity of it. You can't deny the fact that this small minority, possessing nearly all of the land, is one of the principal causes of the poverty of the majority.
That seems true enough. The rent's the biggest item a working man's got to pay. I mean, when you're out of work, you can't afford other things. You're good without them, but the rent has to be paid, whether you're working or not.
Yeah. But you can't expect to get a house for nothing.
I suppose you admit says it's wrong, just for the sake of argument. What then? What about it? How's it going to be altered?
It can't be done.
Whether it can be altered or not, private monopoly is one of the causes of poverty. That is the present system. They have monopolised everything that it's possible to monopolise. They've got the whole earth, the minerals in the earth, and the streams that water the earth. The only reason they have not monopolised the daylight and the air is that it's not possible to do so. If it were possible to construct huge gasometers and compress within them the whole of the atmosphere, most of you here would think that it's right. In exactly the same spirit as you now say, it's their land, it's their water, it's their coal, it's their iron, so you would say, it's their air. These are their gasometers, and what right have the likes of us to expect them to allow us to breathe for nothing?
You'd have anarchy, and everybody getting everything for nothing. Madness! Yeah.
Of course, landlordism is not the only cause. The wonderful system fosters a great many others. Employers of labour, for instance, are as great a cause of poverty as landlords are.
Do you mean to say that if I'm out of work, and a master gives me a job, then he's doing me an injury?
No, of course not. Supposing that the owner of a house wishes to have it repainted, what does he usually do?
As a rule, he goes to 3 or 4 master painters and asks them to give him a price for the job.
Yes, and those master painters, eager to get the work, cut the prices down to what they think is the lowest possible point. Then, to make it pay, he has to scamp the work, pay low wages, and drive and sweat the men whom he employs.
It's what you call business, and not for the likes of us to understand.
He wants 2 days' work for 1 day's pay. The result is that a job which, if it were done properly, would employ, say, 20 men for 2 months, is rushed and scamped in half that time, with half that number of men. This means that 10 men are deprived of 1 month's employment, and 10 other men are deprived of 2 months' employment, all because the employers have been cutting each other's throats to get the work.
Owen, we can't help ourselves. You nor me either. Supposing on this job, we was not to tear into it like we do, well, just keep on steady and do a fair day's work.
We'd all be sent walking by old misery.
We can't help ourselves. If one man won't take it, there's 20 others ready to take his place.
We could help ourselves if we would stand by each other. If, for instance, we all belong to the society.
Here we go, society.
I don't believe in the society. I can't say as it's right that an inferior man should have the same wages as me.
Have you ever really thought what benefits the society might bring?
Well, I suppose I've not
They're
really
read... They're a drunken lot of beer swillers. That's why they always have their meetings in public houses.
What good has the society ever done here?
None that I've ever heard of.
It might be able to do some good if most of us belong to it, but that's another matter. But you must admit that this competition of the employers is one of the causes of unemployment and poverty, because it's not only us. Exactly the same thing happens in every other trade and industry. Competing employers are the upper and nether millstones which grind the workers between them.
I don't see how it's going to be altered. There must be masters. Someone has to take charge of the work and do the thinking.
But if, like Owen says, all the money in the country was shared out equal today, in 6 months' time,
it would be back again in the same hands as it is now. So what are you going to do then? Share it all out again? Yeah. What do you say, Barrington?
Then I'm happy to enjoy my pipe and to sit and listen.
I never said anything about sharing out all the money. And I don't know of any socialist who advocates anything of the kind.
Well, it's a well-known fact that's what socialists want. Why don't you go and share your wages with the chaps what's out of work?
Supposing all the money was shared out equally, and suppose there was enough of it for everyone to have £10,000, and suppose they then all thought they were rich and none of them would work, what would they live on? Their money? Yeah. Could they eat it or drink it or wear it? It wouldn't take them very long to find out that this wonderful money, which under the present system is the most powerful thing in existence, is really of no more use than a handful of dirt.
You're talking rot again, Owen.
If we all had a share, if we all had a share of all the money, we would speedily perish, not from lack of money, but from lack of wealth. That is, from the lack of things that are made by work. But that only proves that while the present money system remains, it will be impossible to do away with poverty, for heaps in some places means little or nothing in other places. Therefore, while the money system lasts, we are bound to have poverty and all the evils it brings in its train.
Ah, well, of course everybody's an idiot except you.
You know, I'm beginning to think a great deal of what Owen says is true, but for my part, I can't see how it's ever going to be altered, can you?
Blowed if I know, mate. But whether it can be altered or not, there's one thing very certain. It won't be done in our time.
Are we continuing our discussion down at the cricketers, Joe? Just said he'd see us down there.
Maybe later. I'm calling in on old Jack Linden to see if his luck's changed.
All right.
Hello. Where's Will got to again?
Oh, he's gone to have a drink with some of the chaps. Said he wouldn't be long. I hope you don't mind me walking in on you.
We gave you a key to do just that. Everything's ready, except just to make the tea, so you may as well have yours now.
Oh, well, then, no worry, Mrs. Easton. I'll wait a little, see if he comes.
If you're sure you don't mind, I should be glad if you will wait, because it will save me making two lots of tea.
Oh, it's you, Mr. Philpott.
Hello, Mary. You all right?
Yeah. Yes, fine, thanks. I'm sorry, I was expecting somebody else. Father's not in.
That's all right. I was only calling to see how he was. Has he had any luck?
He's working.
Oh, that's very good. You must all be most relieved.
Yes, we are.
What with your sewing and Jack working. Please tell him I called to say how delighted I am that things are looking up for him.
I will. Goodbye, Mr. Philpott.
Shall I return later, Mrs. Linden?
No. No, please come in, Mr. Didlum.
Bye, then.
Bye, Mr. Philpott. Is that the best you can offer, Mr. Didlum?
It's more than generous. I am known to have a soft spot for widows of soldiers, and I have to curb my generosity, lest I give too much away.
5 shillings for such a fine table.
You'll get no finer offer. 5 weeks behind on rent, and the agent pressing for payment.
Curse my loose tongue for being so candid.
I'm not pressing an advantage with that knowledge, Mrs. Linden. I'm merely pointing out your difficult circumstances.
As if I could forget. You've had the best of our things since Father's unemployment. Could you not open up your heart knowing you've done well this recent past?
You're asking me to open up my wallet and take bread from the mouths of my bairns. What sort of father would that make me, eh?
I've 2 children and 2 old people to champion. I have to ask you to think again, or I'll hank out the belongings to other markets.
Oh, my sympathy will be my downfall. I'll give you 15 shillings if the clock is included.
My beloved husband invested months of his time and love for his mother in creating that clock. I'll never sell it. Look around at what else you may profit on.
My profit, if ever I should make one on these pitiful goods, is but my business. I could walk from here now and not risk my money.
One last appraisal before you leave, Mr. Didlum.
My last offer will be 30 shillings for the table, the overmantel, the easy chair, those three other chairs, and the two best pictures.
Which ones?
Christ Blessing Little Children and the Good Samaritan.
30 shillings.
£2.07 with the clock.
No. Take the rest and see us on our knees instead of chairs, but I'll not part with the clock.
Half an hour is plenty to wait, I think, Mr. Slime. We shall eat now.
Whatever pleases, Mrs. Easton. Oh, here, let me hold him while you prepare tea.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Slime. I'd best take him back again.
Ooh, wait a minute. I've got something to keep him quiet. Here, I bought it earlier on from the toy shop. Forgot all about it until now.
Beautiful. Just the very thing he wanted. You treat Fred so kindly.
Well, I heard you say the other day that he needed something to bite on, help his teeth through.
Oh, it's not your dad, you silly boy. Your dad ought to be ashamed of himself for staying out like this. We'll give him dad when he comes home, won't we? I'm hungry.
Perhaps we'll have more cheese tonight.
Hello, what are you up to?
Going to see Grandad, Mr. Owen.
Where is he?
Working.
Oh, that's very good news. Is he far from here?
We don't think so. We heard Mum and Nan talking. They said he was walking up and down the high street.
Did you say he was walking or working?
Grandad's working. 1 and 6 a day. We think. We've been having bread and cheese lately. So it must be at least that.
Well, it sounds like good news.
Jack in the box! Oh, Jack in the box! Jack in the box! Oh, Jack in the box! Jack in the box! Oh, Jack in the box!
Don't you shout on my granddad!
Away with you now! Jack, are you all right?
No, Frank, I'm not. I'm worse off for Charlie and Elsie seeing me in this contraption. Help me get it off.
What are you doing, Grandad?
Advertising. But no more. Bad enough through the week, but tomorrow being market day, I'll keep myself out of view.
Frankie, what's wrong?
I was showing some of my friends a kitten when one of their mothers came out and told him not to play with me.
Why ever not?
She said, how could we think of looking after an animal when we were in such a state not to be able to look after ourselves?
Who was it?
Tommy's mother.
The coal merchant's wife? She has no right to upset you with her snobbery.
I want to tell Dad. Then he can tell her how we've taken in the kitten to save a poor life.
Dad isn't home yet.
And she said I was the son of heathens and atheists. That the landlord should burn in hell for letting us live among God-fearing Christians.
So much for Christian kindness.
Might the landlord throw us onto the streets if he heard her? Him being a Christian himself.
All the landlord cares about is the rent. He would not hesitate to let to Satan himself, provided he was certain of receiving the rent regularly. Warm yourself by the fire and forget the cruelty.
Look! Dad's here with friends! Charlie, Elsie, have you come to play?
Yes! In or out?
Out, I think. Then we've peace to talk.
Come on, Katie! You're it!
You all right, Jack?
I'm better now, Nora. Better now that I've thrown off the box that caused me such discomfort and shame.
Box?
Best explained over a cup of tea, I think.
I'm going to be a teacher when I grow up and give all my money to my mum, who can buy nice things for us.
Like sweets and toys.
And nice clothes.
I'm going to open a grocer's shop and have everything we've always wanted in the whole world.
Why a grocer's shop, Charlie?
Why not toys?
Well, with a grocer's shop, there is always plenty to eat. Even if you have no money, you can take as much as you like out of your shop. Tins of salmon, jam,
sardines,
eggs,
cakes,
biscuits,
and all those sorts of things.
And when delivering the groceries with a horse and cart, I'd give rides to all. And in the summertime, after the work was done, shut up shop and take long rides into the country!
Yeah.
They were reckoned a box would provide double the space of sandwich boards, but they didn't think of the weight.
Or didn't care, being more mindful of advertising their goods.
Terrible weight. The straps cut into my shoulders, and with my eyes not being up to much, I kept bumping into things. Now, you knows I'm not Wilshire, Frank, but enough is enough.
Quite right, Jack. Some jobs suit and some don't.
Tea and a little bread and butter, Jack.
Oh, thanks, Nora. And thanks for all your kindness to Charlie and Elsie since I was sent walking by old Misery.
You're welcome. Frankie loves their company.
Oh, I know your freedom. I know what little you got. It's a welcome charity with the mother only bringing in a little from her sewing.
It isn't charity, Jack. It's friendship.
Well, we're most lucky to have your friendship. You and Joe Philpott. He calls with some excuse or another. But the real reason for his visit is to bring some cake or tea. Sometimes even a tin of salmon on a Sunday. All of us is grateful.
Mother! Elsie's getting a prize next Sunday.
What's that for, dear?
I had to learn the whole of the first chapter of Matthew by heart. And I never made one single mistake. So teacher said she'd give me a nice book next Sunday.
Do they give prizes at your Sunday school, Frankie?
I don't go to Sunday school.
Ain't you never been?
Nope. Dad says I have quite enough of school all the week.
You ought to come to ours. It's not like being in school at all. And we have a treat in the summer, and prizes, and sometimes a magic lantern show.
Better go, Mum. Then no one can call us heathens.
Hello, old girl.
William, a nice state you're in. You ought to be ashamed of yourself.
I'll come at last, you see, my dear. Better late than never.
I don't know so much about that.
Don't be angry, Will. It's no good, you know. Don't be angry. I'll be up for work bright and early, and then we'll market some other in the afternoon. Let me take you up to bed.
No, William, no! You reek of stale tobacco and beer.
Right. Right then. I'm away to my bed. Alone.
What about your tea?
I'll not eat when I'm not wanted.
Are you all right, Mrs. Easton?
Oh, yes, Mr. Sline. Fine, thank you.
William is following the wrong path at present, but I'm sure he'll realise and right himself.
I'm not so sure, Mr. Sline. The lure of the cricketers seemed greater than the need to be home with his wife and child.
He's temporarily blinded by the light of the public house, but when he looks away from that and sees again your radiant beauty, he'll realise the error of his ways.
Mr. Sline?
No, I'm sorry. Forgive my boldness, but what man could neglect such an angel in favour of base pursuits? An angel, Ruth.
No more, Mr. Sline. I see you are ready to go out. Perhaps it is best to do so immediately.
Look for the donkey retired from giving beach rides.
William Easton, a man who boasts a hard-working temperament, complains of carrying a string bag of vegetables.
And meat?
A small joint. You may be happy to know the shopping is over.
And over there's Bob Crass and his wife.
They look quite grand.
They're having two lodgers.
Hello there. Enjoying the produce of Mugsborough Market?
Hardly enjoying, Mrs. Crass.
I think it's such a burden he was carrying. Anyway, all marketing's finished now.
Well, then you can join me and my good lady for a reward in the cricketers.
What a splendid suggestion.
No, William. Have you forgotten Freddy?
No. And neither have I forgotten that he's being watched over.
Only for a few hours.
Oh, you can come in for one. My treat.
Play along with him, Ruth. Bob will take so long persuading that you might as well spend the time enjoying a drink.
Come on, Ruth.
You often moan about our lack of socialising.
Oh, I suppose I'm as well being worn down now as I might in 5 minutes or so.
That's a spirit.
I said we really must be getting home now, William.
Soon enough. We don't want Mr. and Mrs. Crash thinking us odd for paying such a fleeting visit.
They might think us odd for being here at all with a child at home.
Looked after.
Have another, Bob.
Yeah.
Five all six.
Oh,
yeah. It's jolly nice to have your company, dear.
Oh, nice of you to say so, Mrs. Crash.
Because this is just about the time Bob likes to come play shove halfpenny.
Oh, perhaps I should take William.
There you are, old girl. Nice glass of beer.
But I don't...
Oh, shan't be long. Just making up the fourth hand at shove halfpenny.
Don't fret, he's leaving. Here, I've enough in my purse for 2 3-penny worths of gin.
Oh!
Lord Jim, the dear.
Oh, no, thank you, Mrs. Cross. I really don't drink.
Well, you're drinking now.
Just to be sociable. I didn't drink at all until meeting William. And then a glass of beer would last me hours.
As Mr. Crass says to me, there's nothing wrong with drink in proportion. I'll get you a gin.
But I...
No good arguing, my dear. I knows what's best.
Oh. You're being well looked after, old girl.
Oh, I want to go home, William.
Well, me winning at shove halfpenny. They did me a bad spoil, leaving without a chance of righting the losses.
Oh, please, William, I don't feel too...
There you are, my dear. Some say mother's ruin, but I say mother's little helper.
Hasten! Hasten, come and take your turn.
I'll see you presently, old girl.
Drink it backwards. Watch.
Well, I don't think I could...
Mm-hmm. Just do it, Ruth. You'll feel an immediate benefit.
Here we go. Watch this, watch and learn.
Are you coming home now? You promised you would.
All right. Presently. It's plenty of time. It's not 9 yet.
That doesn't matter. It's quite late enough. I promise you'll come as soon as you finish that with the game.
All right. Just wait a minute.
If you don't come, I shall go home myself. I don't want to stay in this place any longer.
I'm going to go with you on it. I shall still be here as long as I please. And if you don't like it, you know what to do.
Right. I will.
And set the shopping. Come on, Bob.
Right, come on.
Yeah, do you mind?
Sorry.
Look out, lady!
Sorry.
Oh, you're all right, lady. You look like you're going to get soaked.
She's better than all right. She's drunk.
Please, could somebody... My shopping's so heavy.
Here, watch out.
You sit yourself down and you can walk. Just come on.
Or go back in out the rain and have some more. You can't sit there, dearie. People have to walk past. Does anybody know this wretch?
Oh, wretch. I'm no wretch.
Yeah, of course you're not, my lady. Now, somebody spot your drink, Mum, I reckon. It ain't you all doing it, eh?
Come see a lady down on her luck. Her drink spiked for rendering her legless.
Oh, that's
sad. Oh, dear. Mrs. Eastman? It's Mr. Sloan. Whatever is the matter?
Oh, here he is. The lady's knight in shining armour has arrived.
And the show is over. Please leave her alone.
Oh, you aren't getting
mad. Oh, Mr. Sloan. Thank God it's a friendly face. Please take me home.
Are you drunk?
Not by choice. I accompanied William in secret just to be sociable. He won't come home.
The rain is getting hard. Oh. Come on, we must go.
Oh, thank you. I'm so much of a bother.
You're no bother to me. Oh. Do anything for you. Come along. Your basket. Come on. Easy, lean on my arm.
Freddy, I will see to Freddy.
Freddy has been well cared for.
He's sleeping. I've given his mind a sixpence for her trouble.
I must pay you back, Mr. Slime. You have been ever so good to me, half carrying me in my shopping hole.
It was a pleasure holding you so close, being able to smell your hair and caress you.
Sorry, what did you say, Mr. Slime?
Sit back now, and let me help you get your wet clothes off.
No, you mustn't. I'll be fine left by the fire. I'm so tired.
Oh, get a towel. Your hair's soaking. You'll catch your death of cold. Slip your arms from your coat. Your skirt is wet and heavy.
Don't do that. Please, just leave me to rest.
Let me dry your hair. The rain's got through to your blouse. Your breasts glimmer with raindrops.
What are you doing, Mr. Slime?
I'm looking after you, as you should be. Not neglected. Yeah, let me take off your shoes. Your stockings?
No. No.
You want me?
No.
I want to enter paradise, my angel. Oh, you have conquered me. Cherubims and seraphims are with us.
That's Moses striking the rock. The Israelites dancing round the golden calf.
Who's that big fat man?
Don't you say that. It's the Reverend Belcher.
He looks as though he's eating all the pies in Mugsborough. His waistcoat is stretched to burst like a party balloon.
He's going to speak.
My dear flock, doubtless you have noticed the condition of the interior of our chapel. Flooring broken, walls in need of distempering. Seats, benches and chairs are in need of varnishing. Therefore, it has been decided to open a subscription list, and I want each one of you to take one of these cards and go round to all of your friends to see how much you can collect. I hope you will all do your very best. Ask everyone if your friends are very poor and unable to give a large donation at one time. A good plan would be to arrange to call upon them every Saturday afternoon with your card to collect their donations. Brother Hunter has kindly consented to act as secretary to the fund. Before we sing the closing hymn, the gentleman on my left, the Reverend John Starr, will say a few words.
I have been asked to say a few words on the failing health of your dear minister, who has for some time past engaged the anxious attention of the congregation.
Poor Reverend Belcher, looking very tired.
Poor Reverend Belcher, although naturally robust, long continued overwork, the loving solicitude for others that often prevented him taking even necessary repose, and a too rigorous devotion to the practice of self-denial have at last brought about the inevitable breakdown and rendered a period of rest absolutely imperative. Yesterday, your dear shepherd was presented with a purse of gold sufficient to defray the expenses of a month's holiday in the south of France. Although, of course, he regrets being separated from you even for such a brief period, he feels that in going, he is choosing the lesser of two evils. it is better to go to the south of France for a month than to continue working in spite of the warnings of exhausted nature and perhaps be taken away from you altogether. By heaven.
God forbid!
Leaving for where, precisely, Mr. Slime?
Oh, I've been offered work further down the coast, Mr. Hunter.
Well, this is very sudden.
Yes, an opportunity that has to be grasped. I'm telling nobody but you, Mr. Hunter, me being of a no-fuss nature.
Except Easton being your landlord.
Oh, I'll leave a note, so as not to have my farewell dragged out.
Well, you'll find no better firm than Rushton's, of course, Slime.
I know that, Mr. Hunter. And thank you for your Christian kindness.
I'm here against my better instincts, Mrs. Linden.
Why so, Mr. Didlum?
Business is terrible. I'm helping people out as if I'm a charity instead of a family man with mouths to feed.
I perhaps asked you to call with more reluctance than you came, but I had no choice.
The room has changed some. Since it was last here, a month or so ago, have you been selling somewhere else?
Yes. The goods which you showed no interest in have been hand-carted to the street market.
Then I hope you haven't wasted my time. I know from my last visit that you have nothing of value upstairs, and have no need of more bedding.
All our bedding is gone.
Then why am I here, Mrs. Linden?
To take away our most precious possession, Mr. Didlum, and I beg you to take into account that it is the last memento of my dearest husband.
The clock?
Yes. You cannot imagine our sadness of being brought to such circumstances.
I see much sadness in my travels, Mrs. Linden. Perhaps you can take comfort knowing you are far from alone in these difficulties. After leaving here, I'm calling on Mrs. Easton, who's now without her lodger.
Much as I sympathise with Ruth Easton's difficulties, I can't let them deflect from my own need to receive a fair price for the clock.
I'm just making you aware of the difficulties all around us and how my generosity is stretched. I will, however, offer you 10 shillings for the clock.
You offered 17 and 6 pence a month ago.
A month ago, my business was better placed.
And then you knew we were only 5 weeks behind with the rent. I suppose you are now updated with our circumstances.
10 shillings, Mrs. Linden. The risk is all mine, as the clock could linger in the shop for years.
Next.
Jack Linden, sir.
You've only filled in half the Benevolent Society form.
Me eyes ain't so good, sir. I had great difficulty.
Well, when did you last work?
I last worked properly 16 weeks ago. My trade is a painter, but I was sent walking on near completion of the job. Mm-hmm. Then I scratched 18 pennies a day carrying an advertising box, but what with me eyes and the weight of the thing, I...
How old are you?
I'm in my 67th year, sir. I have a wife, my son's widow, and her 2 children to care for.
Well, I'll present your case at the next benevolence meeting in 4 days' time.
Thank you, sir, but...
What?
We're starving, sir. My eyes are red with tears seeing the young uns suffering, sir.
Have you nothing to sell?
Everything's gone. Even the bedclothes. We scrape together what we can at night to stave off the cold. My pride has kept me away from here for so long, but we're at desperation.
I'll let you have 2 soup tickets and an order for loaf of bread.
Thank you, sir, but...
Your case will be considered as stated. Next!
Ruth! Ruth!
You wake Freddy. I do not come straight home for once without diversion to the cricketers.
So? What did you sell to Didlum?
The washstand. I truly need the proceeds, William.
How much did he give you?
The rent must be paid in part at least tomorrow.
How much?
3 shillings.
Well, give me 1 and 6 and all will be happy.
Happy? I'll hardly ever see you.
So? When we are together, there are never relations between us.
First of all, you have to be here.
What? You've been distant these past weeks, Ruth. I mean, even to the point of us lying in bed together and not touching. I mean, give me the 1 and 6. Please.
Yes, but what's to become of us, William?
What's become of you, Ruth? I mean, where's the woman I married You're sitting, staring into the darkness of the room. You only tend to for anyone who demands your attention.
I'm sorry, you're right. My mind drifts to better times and I mustn't let it. Don't take the money, William. Please, just stay with me.
When you've a mind to talk to me as company, I will. Meantime, I'll enjoy companionship down at the cricketers.
Oh, William, please, just...
Just give me the money, Ruth! Thank you!
It's more like treacle than paint. Who's mixed this, Bert?
Cross. I did hear him say as it's for gutters and roofing, it'll do.
Yeah, and it won't half blister next summer when it gets a bit of sun on it.
I suppose they're afraid that if they was to put a little terps in, it wouldn't bear out, and they'd have to give it another coat.
You can bet your life on that, Frank. I hate having to go up the ladder once, never mind twice.
It's me that has to go up the longest ladder to paint gutters at tops of barge boats.
They should have scaffolding for one so high.
When did he pay for scaffold? When we're all a fraction of the cost?
I mean to pinch a drop of terps as soon as Crass is gone.
Gone where?
There's another funeral on today.
I reckon Crass must be making a small fortune out of all these funerals. I mean, this makes the fourth in the last fortnight.
How much do they get paid for the task?
Well, they get a shilling for taking on the coffin and lifting in the corpse, and they get 4 bob for the funeral. So it's 5 bob altogether.
That's a bit of all right, isn't it? Couple of them in a week besides your week's wages, eh? 5 bob for 2 or 3 hours' work.
Yeah, the money's all right, mate, but they're welcome to it for my part. I don't want to go messing round with no corpses, especially not the size of the last one.
Who was it?
Reverend Belcher, what used to belong to the Shining Light Chapel. He'd been abroad for his holidays, to Monte Carlo. It seems he was coming back again, but while he was standing on the platform at Monte Carlo station waiting for the train, a porter runned into him with a barrel load of luggage, and he blowed up.
Blowed up?
Yeah, blowed up, busted, exploded all into pieces. But they swept them all up and put it in a coffin, and it's to be planted this afternoon.
That seems highly unlikely.
I had a drink the other night with a butcher bloke what used to serve this parson with his meat, and he wondered why that man didn't blow up long ago, considering the amount of grub he used to make away with. Tons of it!
People don't just explode, Frankie.
The vicar has. Everyone was talking about it at school. Do you think it was a biblical sign, Mother?
No, I do not. I've never heard of anything more ridiculous.
People says as they'll have to find a new minister.
That won't be such a problem. There are plenty of idlers about wearing the church's cloth.
Was the vicar an idler, Mother?
As one of those who live without doing any necessary work, vicars are the very worst.
Why, Mum?
You know that all the beautiful things which the people who do nothing have are made by the people who work, don't you?
Yes.
And you know that those who work have to eat the very worst food and wear the very worst clothes and live in the very worst homes?
Yes.
And sometimes they have nothing to eat at all and no clothes to wear except rags and even no homes to live in.
Yes.
Well, vicars go about saying that God meant them to work very hard and to give all the good things they make to those who do nothing. He also tells them that they mustn't grumble or be discontented because they're poor in this world, but God will reward them by letting them go to a place called heaven.
And what about the idlers?
Vicars say that if the idlers believe everything they tell them, and they give them some of the money they make out of the workers, then God will let the idlers into heaven also.
Is it true, Mum?
No, it can't be true.
Why can't it, Mum?
If we read the Bible, we find that Jesus said that God is our Father, and that all the people in the world are his children, all brothers and sisters. But the vicar says that although Jesus said brothers and sisters, he really ought to have said masters and servants. See, the church doesn't really believe or do any of the things that Jesus said. It only pretends to.
And don't the people know this?
Most of the idlers know that what the vicar says is not true, but pretend to believe and give him money for telling it to the workers so that they will not think for themselves.
Why don't the workers know this?
Because their mothers and fathers told them the lies they have been taught. Then their school teachers told them. And then when they went to church, the vicar and the Sunday school teacher told them the same thing.
It's Charlie and Elsie.
Well, let them in.
We have to go to the workhouse, Mother. Mary.
Father's right. Just till we get things worked out.
Why must we go, Jack? If we wait until the final hour, God will look favourably on us and show us his mercy.
Tell her, Mary. This is the final hour. I explain until I'm hoarse. She accepts what I'm saying, and then when I think all's said, she asks me again.
Mother, Father has told you that you have to go.
Why must we, Mary? And what of you and the children?
We'll look after the house until you return. It has to be done, Mother, or we'll be given no relief from the Benevolence Board.
But I've never lived anywhere else. This is my home. This was my mother and father's home. Our Dorothy and Ernest, Andrew, May and Tom.
And they've all gone now, Mother, and so must we.
I can't live anywhere else. I know every lump in the floor, every draft hole to block up. I can walk the length and breadth in the dark and never bump my head or a limb. This is my home.
Mary, we have to report or miss the evening meal. We have to be on our way.
You must leave this minute, Mother. Go before Charlie and Elsie return from the Owens. They mustn't see your distress.
We don't want that, Mother.
Why must we, Jack, when Mary will be on her own here with the children?
It's the rules. We must obey the rules.
I must come back here to die in my own bed. I'll not die with strangers gawping and picking at my belongings.
We'll come back when our debts are sorted.
You're a good girl, Mary. You'll sort our debts and bring us home.
Of course I will, Mother. Of course I will.
Our Tom picks such a wife. Such a good wife.
Come, Mother. Before the doors are locked on us.
If our Tom had not been so brave and got away to fight for Empire, we'd have lived finely.
He was too brave, and we shall be so proud.
The clock. I can't leave without his clock.
It's at the mender's for cleaning and repair, Mother. It'll be with you on its return.
Months and months he worked at it, and no one ever guessed who it was for.
Come now, Mother.
And then, come my birthday morning, the very first thing I saw was the clock by the bed with a card.
Mother!
To dear Mother, for my loving son Tom, 5 months afterwards sent out to Africa, and there 6 weeks when he died.
What do you think of my humble abode, Reverend Stark?
A privilege to be shown round such a fine cave, Mr. Sweater.
My pleasure, Reverend. Feel free to wander before our charity meeting begins. Throw another log on the fire, Didlum.
Aye, it's getting a wee bit chilly. This is my favourite room.
Magnificent. Japanese?
Moorish. I got the idea at the Paris exhibition. It's similar to the decorations in the Alhambra, the palace of the Sultan of Morocco. That clock is in the same style.
It puts me in mind of an Indian mosque. Did you bring it back from Paris?
No. I'm fortunate enough to have Mr. Didlum to act as agent for me. He attained it.
But the workmanship is superb. Obviously, made by a gifted artisan.
As soon as I saw it, I had Mr. Sweater in mind, a man who appreciates the finer things.
I went to the continent in search of such finery, and Didlum had this ornate clock here in Mugsborough.
I went to the Paris exhibition myself.
Really, Reverend?
On church business, as an observer.
And was there anything that particularly impressed you?
Not the material extravagances, of course, but I was astounded by certain scientific theories put forward there.
All stuff and nonsense.
Think so, Rushton?
Oh, yes. It's all right for the likes of us, but feeble-minded people like my workmen take so-called scientific facts as gospel.
They haven't got their breathing.
Exactly, Didlum. Take this idea that the world is round, for instance. Yeah. They say Australia is underneath our feet. If true, what's to prevent the people there dropping off?
According to science, the Earth turns round on its axle at the rate of 20 miles a minute. Well, what about when a lark goes up in the sky and stays there a quarter of an hour? Mm. If it was true that the Earth was turning round at that rate, it would find itself hundreds of miles away from the place where it went up from. But the bird always comes down in the same spot.
Exactly. And this here theory of evolution, saying we came from monkeys, it's as plain as day we came from Adam and Eve. Right, Reverend?
Well, yeah. Until a monkey says different.
We hardly played out at all when both Charlie and Elsie wanted to come in for a rest.
I think perhaps it was the thought of bread and warm milk that lured them in.
They said they hardly has anything to eat at home. to be so.
Aye, they are having a hard time of it with their grandfather out of work and their poor mother hardly earning.
Seems as if they haven't been sleeping much either, the way they snuggled in front of our fire and dropped straight off.
That's just about it. We have to be very grateful to your dad for providing for us.
When I'm grown up, I'm going to be one of the workers. And when we've made a lot of things, I shall stand up and tell the others what to do. If any of the idlers come to take our things away, they'll get something they won't like.
You do that, Frankie. And let's hope you find others thinking the same way. Hello, Ruth. All right.
I think I need to sit down. I'm sorry to drop on you like this.
Well, it's good to see you. No need to apologise.
And Freddy's asleep. Is there no one to entertain me?
Don't you wake him up. I'm sure Mrs. Easton's grateful of the peace.
He fell asleep as we left the house. Charlie and Elsa look so peaceful.
Mary will be along shortly to pick him up. Fetch a piece of coal, Frankie.
Must I do it now, Mum? The fire's roaring.
Please, Frankie. Here's a penny to buy sweets from shop.
Thanks, Mum. Charlie and Elsie will be pleased when they wake up.
You seem troubled, Ruth.
Yes. But what are the Lindens? Is it today when they go to the workhouse?
Aye. Frankie will find out soon enough, but I don't want them quizzing Charlie and Elsie when they wake.
Oh, it's a terrible thing. Few return.
Yourself, woman, that's not Doc.
Why has they brought me to this terrible place, Jack?
Not brought thee willingly, but I'll willingly work with all that's left in me to get us out of here.
Where's Mary?
Waiting for Charlie and Elsie. You have to remember things. You have to make the effort to remember.
I remember good things, Jack. When you were young and strong. When you could work from morn till dusk and nobody did better for Rushton's.
Think on those times to see us through these. We're together, Mother. Still together. And we'll look after each other no matter what.
Is Mary coming with the children?
Not tonight. Let's eat, find our bed. Tomorrow will be better.
Once again, gentlemen, I must ask for your generous gifts to provide goods for our jumble sale on behalf of the unfortunate members of our parish. We will be grateful for any articles for which you have no further use, and we could collect.
I'll draw up collecting, Rosa Reverend. And if you could mention... Yes.
Yes, of course, Mr. Hunter. unfortunately, there are numerous expenses incurred because of our generosity.
Indeed.
Stationery, stamps, printing, and so on. And a reasonable amount must be kept in hand for future expenses.
Quite right. We would be failing in our duties as businessmen if we did otherwise.
Quite right, Rushton. Yeah.
Mr. Hunter here will now read out the list of our distributed bounteousness for the past year.
During the year, 1,972 applications for assistance have been received. And of this number, 1,302 have been assisted as follows. Bread or grocery orders, 273.
Very good.
Coal or coke orders, 57. Mm-hmm. Pairs of boots granted, 29. Clothing, 105. Crutch granted to poor man lamed at work, 1.
It was addressed to Father, but I knew it helped my fate from the writing.
Out by the end of the week?
Yes. Nothing mentioned about the back rent, though, just to leave. I suppose Mr. Sweater thinks £600 out of Father over the years allows him some charity.
What will you do?
I don't know yet. My head's still spinning from the ultimatum. On condition the old bonds went into the workhouse, I'm allowed 3 shillings a week to provide for me and the children. I can still make some from sewing, but not without a roof over our heads.
You must move in with us.
No, I couldn't impose.
It's the thing to do. The room is ready, apart from a wash basin.
What will William think?
It'll be fine by him, Mary. He got used to us having a lodger and doesn't spend more time than he needs to in the house. Move in within the week.
You've a kind heart, Ruth.
And the children can spend as much time as they like with us, Mary. They and you will be fed when we are.
Thank you. Thank you both. Dear friends, I am truly in the company of angels. Ruth, what is the matter?
I'm pregnant. Oh, I swear not to tell. Dear God, sometimes angels lead us down a strange path.
In episode 2 of The Ragged Trousered Philanthropists, Crass was played by Timothy Spall. Owen was played by Andrew Lincoln, Bundy by Tony Pitts, and Easton by Johnny Vegas. Barrington and Reverend Starr were played by Tom Goodman Hill, Philpott by Tony Haygarth, Bert by Des O'Malley, and Hunter by Paul Whitehouse. Rushton was played by Bill Bailey, Slime and Reverend Belcher by Kevin Eldon, and Ruth by Shirley Henderson. Mary was played by Emma Fryer, Mr. Didlum by Rupert Degas, Charlie by Jake Pratt, Elsie by Yasmin Garrett, and Lyndon by Philip Jackson. Nora was played by Raquel Cassidy, Frankie by Robert Madge, and Mrs. Lyndon and Mrs. Crass by Gwyneth Powell. The Ragged Trousered Philanthropists by Robert Tressel was adapted for radio by Andrew Lynch. The producers were Rebecca Pinfield and Johnny Vegas, and the director was Dirk Maggs. It was an above-the-title production in association with Woollyback Productions for BBC Radio 4.